Go Sun Chiefs.
Go Sun Chiefs, baby.
Are they still the Sun Chiefs?
Hell yeah, apparently. But I'll see how long that gets canceled. Check, check, check. Check, check, check. Check, check. Check. Check, check.
Welcome to the View from the Fence Post podcast. I'm excited today to have a really good buddy, longtime friend joining me with John Cochran. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me, brother.
It is a pleasure. Now, I have mentioned before on this podcast that I personally am a musician, have been for a long time, but sitting next to you, I would say that I dabble.
Oh, no, man. I haven't even practiced today, so.
Oh, today. Well, John and I met each other a long time ago for the first time.
Yep.
In Sun Chief Sound.
Sun Chief Sound. Go Sun Chiefs.
Go Sun Chiefs. And it was at Faulkner State Community College, which is now
Coastal Alabama Community College.
Coastal Alabama. And you teach there, right?
I do teach there. I teach in the music department there. I've been there since 2015.
What else do you do?
That's a good question. I try to be heavily involved in the music scene. I teach for Coastal Alabama. One thing I've been doing for a while is I'm a promoter. So I put together music festivals, events, manage bands as well. One of the things I've done that's been a long running thing is a Live at Five concert series that's been going on since 2016. Also, this year I'm the promoter and producer of the Fairhope Music Festival. And then Mobtown Music, Downtown Mobile, I think, which is with one of the things that caught your interest to have me on here.
Absolutely.
Co-owner and partner of Mobtown Music Downtown.
Awesome. And, you know, I got to say, and this is maybe selfish and personal, but we definitely needed another more localized high-end version of a music store. And how cool is it that it's connected to a really, really nice recording studio?
Yeah, isn't that cool, man? And I think having a music store downtown is certainly a need. You know, I get a lot of friends calling on, you know, not a few weeks ago, you shouted at me, needed a guitar.
I got to tell you, man, you saved my tail that day. I was playing a gig downtown on a Sunday, right around brunch time, and setting up my gear, turned my back, and my guitar case fell just right on over inside the hard shell case.
At the gig? I thought you just opened it. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So just maybe 30 minutes before showtime.
Yeah. And you broke that guitar.
I wish I could have said I broke it like in a cool way,
like you brought it in to fix it, and I was like, I can't fix this. I called people and they were like, yeah, that's not, send it to Taylor.
Well, I love that guitar. It's sentimental. It's a great guitar.
Yeah,
and it's certainly
guitar.
Worth putting the money in to fix.
Good thing they can fix it. Yeah.
Well, good thing that you guys were there on a Sunday, or at least, you know, right?
Because
you just, if you're the business owner, sometimes you're just there.
Yeah, I was just hanging out.
Yeah. So, and you teach lessons out of the shop and...
Yeah, I do lessons. We just expanded in the back, you know, and we have more lesson rooms available. Like you mentioned, we're connected to Dolphin Street Sound, which is like a multi-million dollar Grammy and Emmy award winning studio. So that's really cool to be there with those guys. So we do lessons, repairs, amp repairs, sales. We have brass and wind instruments. I have teachers on any instrument you could want to come in and take a lesson on. So
I've been in there. It looks really cool. And then I went in there again the next week and it looked really different and really cool.
Yeah, we move things around. It's nice though, man. You come in and have a cup of coffee and hang out. We got couches and, you know, musicians are usually, a lot of musicians are coming in and hanging and chilling, and I laugh all day long, man. It's a blessed thing.
Well, we want to hear a bunch of your stories and a little bit about your background. And I'll cue up a few questions here in a minute that I want to ask you. But for the listeners, I want to get into a little bit of a psychology lesson really quickly.
Okay, let's go.
And so I can relate to this a little bit myself. And if you ask my wife, probably the same, being married to a musician. But this podcast is really about humility. It's about looking backwards, about kind of what led you from where you were to where you are now, maybe the event or the people that helped push you to get there. And musicians are just, at least the good ones, are just that type of person. They're just humble by nature.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah. You know, there's, it seems to be the case. You run every once in a while, you can run into the stereotypical lead singer, but yeah.
yep.
So, but other than that,
hey, I'm carrying my microphone in here. I'm good, right?
I know, man.
So, we're trained from day one. I know my mom told me a lot when I was first learning how to play the guitar. I was learning all the Metallica riffs so I could get going.
Right on.
And she said, don't forget that no matter how hard you try and no matter how hard you get, there's always going to be someone out there that's better than you, right?
Right, right.
And that is a hard pill to swallow at first.
Yeah.
And then you see it. You know, it doesn't matter how much you excel. There's just somebody that's 10 years younger than you flying past you in skill level, or someone that's 30 years older than you that, you know, is well beyond where you could ever hope to be. It's okay. It feels okay.
Yeah.
And then we get to hanging out with like-minded individuals and we pick up interesting skills and we pick up influences and little bits and pieces from other people that teach us things. And that ultimately changes and molds our own styles and perspectives.
For sure.
Right. And so, musicians have an awesome skill set, and that is listening as a rare quality.
Hopefully. Yeah. Right? Yeah, for sure.
And I think the listening piece is kind of twofold. Number one, just being able to absorb things around you and those become part of who you are, like we talked about with having influences.
Right.
So the question of, hey, could you have gotten to where you are today without someone else helping you is, I mean, that's a gimme for a musician. I mean, it's thousands
for anybody,
of,
yeah, right? Interdependence.
And the other is maybe an acquired or trained skill, and that is the ability to have anticipatory listening, listening to with expectation of what's to come.
Yeah.
And so this is where my wife comes in, right?
Okay.
Because sometimes I listen in trying to anticipate what she's going to say or what the problem is or what, and so that can be frustrating for a spouse. But in music, we're always trying to, especially as a jazz player or, you know, a freelance guitar player playing with a new band for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
You're listening for your cues, man. You're trying to pick up on what's coming so that you can prepare what you're going to play next.
Yeah.
And I feel like that becomes a personality trait that just, you know, spreads out.
Yeah.
In our everyday life.
For sure.
So, what do you do for fun? I mean, don't say music. Is it music?
No, I mean, for fun, I mean, what I do for a living is fun, man. You know, my dad wasn't in my life very long, but I remember him telling me when I was young to figure out what you love to do and figure out how to make money doing it, and you'll never work a day in your life. And so that's why you can probably find me at Mobtown Music 50 or 60 hours a week in addition to teaching at a college and all that, man, because it doesn't really feel like work. It feels like I'm hanging with my friends and being involved in the creative process, which is always rewarding moment to moment. But I don't know if other people consider it fun. I'm big into meditation. I'm big into spiritual practice. And, so I go on silent meditation retreats, things of that nature. I also like to go to the beach. I'm an amateur attempting surfer. So, go over to Destin or Pensacola and fall over a bunch of times. Spend some time out in nature. I have a pretty cool dog named Layla, who's probably,
Met Layla.
You met, yeah, most people have, man. Layla is arguably more well known in Mobile and Baldwin County than I am, you know, and that's no joke. You know, I go to, she goes to all my gigs. She comes to me when I teach my lecture classes, and she's actually resting today because she's getting older. She gets tired, but she typically wouldn't be with me all the time. So spend time with my dog, you know.
I'm sure I don't have to ask, but where did your dog get her name?
You should ask her. She got her name from the old Persian love story called The Story of Layla and Majnun, which means The Story of Layla and the Madman, which is the name. It was written down by a poet named Nizami in around the 500th century in what is modern day Baghdad and Iraq. So I bet you weren't expecting this answer. And so that is where Eric
caught me off guard with that.
4,000 verses of beautiful poetry that I've read several translations of and give a lecture on in my course. And so Layla got her, and Majnun means the madman. I think I said that already, but so it's a story. It's the basis of Romeo and Juliet, actually. Yeah, that's where Shakespeare got the Romeo and Juliet story.
I mean, you really caught me off guard there, buddy. Yeah. Like, I was not expecting that answer.
I have her name tattooed in Arabic on my arm, actually.
See, this is cool, man. I love sitting here and learning more about you.
Yeah.
Especially as long as we've known each other, ran into each other several times.
Yeah, yeah.
You and I have so many mutual friends, and you've played with all of them, you know, in the music community.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very fortunate, man. I don't know why people call me when they're in need of a mediocre guitar player. So this works out.
I know this is probably going to be a big question.
Okay.
Who or what set of events would you say that you would attribute your success to today? I mean, what's been the...
In terms of like why I'm a musician or why I work as hard as I do or what do you...
I mean, you take it. What,
okay.
Your work ethic, yeah. your desire to become and be a business owner.
Cool. The moment I decided I was going to be a musician, I was a young man, and I was in the kitchen with my mom, and my father had passed away recently. And it was me and my mom living alone in a house. She raised me by herself. And I remember she used to pick me up from school sometimes. Well, I should preface this by saying, when he was in the, he had a heart attack at the YMCA, and he and I were playing basketball together, and they were doing CPR on him. And my mother somehow made it to the Y while that process was still going on. And so we decided to pray what I was told to pray to at that age. And I was young. And I said out loud in my, or not out loud, but in my mind, like, if this doesn't work out, like, religion's not for me. And so it didn't work out. And so after that happened a few months later, whatever, my mom would pick me up from school, and I could tell she'd had a rough day because her, you know, she's raising kids by herself. And we would get home and start cooking dinner. And then I noticed pretty early on that if I put a Marvin Gaye record on, or if I could put the Four Tops on, or the Temptations, usually Motown or Stax Records, soul, old, it's black gospel music, is what it really is. And I could turn around and I would watch her change. I would see her go from tears to smiling, and we'd dance in the kitchen, and I would get goosebumps. And I said, I don't know what this is, but I want to dedicate my life to whatever this is. And so that's been my purpose.
Wow. Yeah, man, that's an awesome story.
And then in terms of just why I worked as hard as I do, I've had really good mentors, man. You were talking about, you know, staying humble as a musician. When I lived in Nashville, I was very fortunate. My cousin and I, who's actually playing with J-Mo from the Allman Brothers now, we're raised as Allman Brothers fans. And a guy named Jack Pearson, who is unarguably the best guitar player in Nashville, which obviously puts you in the running for best guitar player in the world, is he took my cousin and I under his wing and mentored us and got us on stage with him and had us play with him. And he's done shows in Mobile, and he comes down and stays. And so being around a musician like that, a guy that can play like that, is really, it's always humbling.
I don't remember the year that you and I were on scholarship at the same time at yeah. Sun Chief. Do you, any idea what year that was?
2010, 11.
Okay. Do you still talk to any of those guys?
Well, there's a lot of cats that from that band that are players now.
Right.
Greg DeLuca, Owen Finley, Justin Phobes, Jerry Gambino, mm-hmm. Brian Balthrop.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Flo the other day. She's still doing stuff.
About Rebecca?
Rebecca Berry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she and I teach together. We played a gig together last Sunday for a wedding.
I've been wondering.
Weirdest wedding gig ever, man. But yeah.
She doing okay?
Oh, yeah. Rebecca's good. She's still teaching there.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, Rebecca. Man, Rebecca can talk about somebody that can play.
She is a monster on that.
She can play, man. Dude. Especially when she just decides she wants to. Because she can play without even trying. And then when she decides to try, it's like, oh, man. Somebody like that's in Mobile. What's she doing?
That's you too, though. I mean... Yeah, just be humble over there. But I remember hearing you at Sun Chief,
okay.
Right? And then I remember hearing you, I think it was either last year or sometime, it was at Callahan's, you were playing with a group. It was another young guitar player that worked at Guitar
Jenna
Center.
McClellan, man.
The Jenna McClellan,
yeah,
man.
Caleb's a great guitar player, man.
You guys were crushing it, man. Both of you. Just
yeah.
Just destroying.
Well, it's like, I think, you know, Miles Davis talks about this. You know, Miles Davis used to say, he curses, but he could say, I could tell whether a can play by the way he stands, which is an amazing statement to say. Like, that's the coolest thing ever, dude. It's just like Miles would be like, I would hire guys or get guys to come to auditions and I could watch how he stood. But, you know, Caleb and I are very different players, man. It's apples and oranges. So like, I think the older you get, you settle into what your sound is. And I don't try to do what Caleb does, and Caleb doesn't try to do what I do. And like, to be in a band with a guy that's like that, where it's non-competitive and it's mutual respect and admiration, where he plays stuff and I'm just smiling and loving it, you know, and then I do what I do, which is whatever it is that I do, and he appreciates that. It's you know, it's why guys like John Coltrane and Miles Davis being on records together is so beautiful, you know.
For sure, man. Did you mention earlier, we were talking in the lobby downstairs, did you mention earlier you played at a church too on Sundays?
I play at a church across the street from here every Sunday, yeah. I play bass in a church every Sunday. Yeah, hold the low end.
Paul Rose slapping the bass?
Slapping the bass, yeah, man. I'm far from being proficient enough on bass to slap well, but yeah, I play at Ashland Place Methodist Church right across the street.
I didn't realize that, man. That's cool. The Ascension Band?
Yeah, I've been doing that for over a year now, every Sunday.
Tell me more about the Live at Five concert series. What is that?
Yeah, cool. So Live at Five is we have two, usually they're the second and fourth Fridays of the month, and it's on the Coastal Alabama Community College campus. At this beautiful amphitheater in downtown Fairhope, you wouldn't know was there. You know, I mean, I had the Spin Doctors play last Friday, and we had 2,200 people, 2,500 people out there, you know, which was so much fun. You know, the Spin Doctors are so cool, man. They're so, so nice guys. They were a good hang. But yeah, so I've been doing that since like 2016. And we do a fall and the series itself goes along with the semester. So we do a fall series and a spring series. And, you know, next week I've got Anders Osborne. If you're a New Orleans musician fan, I'm a Anders Osborne fanatic. Great, great guitar player, singer. I mean, he was just open for Tedeschi Trucks Band at the Beacon in New York like last week. And then I've got a band called Flow Tribe opening for him. So that's the last one of this. Well, no, there's that one. And I have a makeup date on the 7th. We're having a Southern Rock Night with a tribute to the Allman Brothers and a tribute to Lynyrd Skynyrd. So two really great pro bands.
I know for a while, like, I don't know if you were a part of a specific band, but you were like the guy that every solo musician in town or trio or whatever would be like freelance, just like, hey, John, join us. So you played with like every band, right?
Yeah, hire me for as long as they can put up with me.
Sure.
One of the two, man. But I've been in a lot of bands, man. I've been in Jimmy Lumpkin, The Revival, Lauren Murphy and The Psychedelics, Johnny Hayes and The Love Siege, Jenna McClellan Band, Bodie Trio. I've played with Ryan Balthrop, Piers and McKenna. I mean, a lot of people. And
The list goes on, right?
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of times it's just like a freelance thing, like you were talking about, like listening, you know. I think like you were talking about listening skills, and I think it boils down to like in personal life, that's like the ability to listen is intimacy. That's like what people are looking for. I'm not even talking about necessarily romantic intimacy, but like if people want your attention and if you have the ability to give that to them fully, whether that's a client here at your business or whatever, like I'm not distracted. I'm looking into you. Right. And then, I think that capacity to be more intimate and empathetic is developed on stage. Cause I got the Jenna McClellan Band gig. I was playing with Lauren Murphy and the Psychedelics on the tent stage, and they brought a guitar player down from Nashville who was too drunk to play. And so I'm leaving out from a gig at 10 o'clock and they were like, hey, can you come play a 4-hour gig with us? I don't know their set list, nothing. And just being able to walk up and be like, cool, I'll survive. Right. You know, and get through a 4-hour gig without a set list. I mean, I knew a lot of the songs, but that's like more like awareness and listening skills and being very present in the moment, you know, like, You gotta be right there, man.
I have a question. Okay. How hard did you have to work to as a musician to cross that line of where you don't have to think about it so hard? When someone plays something, you're able to just fall in and be able to kind of catch up, play along. And this is coming from a guy that, you know, I perform out. I play a lot of cover songs.
Right.
And so a lot of what I do is reading off an iPad.
Right.
Right. Because there's hundreds of songs. I can't commit all these lyrics and all these chords to memory. Right.
For sure.
And so I have that there to help with my cues. But you jump into a band, no notes. You hear the music. Your fingers move. How did that How hard was that?
Yeah. I mean, it's helpful if they give me a key center for sure. But if they, if they don't, I guess you just figure that out. But, I don't know, man. It's like, you know, when any process like that, it's like a lot of, it's not instantaneous, right? Like, but it feels like it's, but, I worked really hard, man. I mean, like I've started playing guitar 30 years ago when I was 5 years old. So, and then, you know, if we end up talking about it or not, my process in undergraduate and graduate school, especially graduate school, I practiced an average of 11 hours a day. And that's not like, I can show you the Excel documents where I kept track of everything I was doing every day. It was very organized. It added up the minutes, and I figured out ways where I could make, if I had to work on sight reading and a tune, I'd sight read, whatever, like where I could cross over subjects to get the most amount done. But I averaged 11 hours a day, and I was hospitalized for back pain twice in my first semester, to where I practiced so much that I couldn't walk.
I've certainly went through seasons where I was a 3 to 6 hours a day practicer, but it didn't stick like for my entire, you know, right. But you notice these just huge gains during that time frame, or maybe you don't, maybe you just see these small and incremental, but then someone else hears you play and they're like, oh my, holy cow, you've got so much better. And you know, since the last time I've heard you, and that, it feels good to hear because the work pays off. But I don't think people truly understand if they're not a musician.
Right. They use that word talent.
Yeah.
I hate that word.
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. Someone comes up to me and they want to be like, man, you're so talented. I want to be like, no, I've put over 10,000 hours in. And it's easy for it. And I will go, and dependent, usually I don't go into it with people, but like, it's a lot easier to say that's a thing he can do that I can't do, than to say he worked 12,000, literally 12,000, 15,000, I don't know, hours. That's that whole Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hour rule thing, right? But I think that was his, he's the one that wrote about that. But it's a lot easier to say someone's talented and, you know, whatever. If anything, I've been interested in music my whole life. It's never come easy to me.
Mm-hmm. It never come easy. So, yeah, I mean, that's just interesting, right? Like, you hear a skilled pianist or you hear a skilled musician of any instrument, and it just sounds like it's natural to them, or like it was this natural born talent, and you hear the product, but you don't see the effort.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's very interesting to me. Cause I mean, I personally know, you know, what it took to be able to become decent. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you see these people that are savants or just, you think it's just born talent.
Oh yeah.
Maybe a little bit, not always.
Yeah, well, there's certainly like, I mean, I could talk about this for days, man, because I do, you know, but like, you can cross over into the athletic realm, and it's like easier to see physical, if someone is physically built to be a fullback, that's easy to see. So inherent musical aptitude is not easily apparent, but like.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that.
So like, I don't know. So in terms of like jazz musicians, like some of them have an ability to memorize very complex forms. Like it's not super challenging for me to commit old jazz standards from the 30s and 40s to memory and be able to play them from memory. Like there's a process I do to go through that, you know, if that makes sense.
It does. What are some of the, I got to put you on the spot here.
Come on.
What are some of the venues, man? Where are some of the places you play? And maybe some of the business owners that give you a shot to come there to their establishment, right? And play music?
I mean, Noel Broughton and John Thompson are two absolute, I hope they hear this, two gentlemen that I adore with all my heart. And they've done so much for the music scene, which is Callahan's Irish Social Club. Mm-hmm. And I love Callahan's Irish Social Club. My mom and my dad had their first date there. So without Callahan's, it's arguable that I wouldn't exist. And then my sister married a Callahan, so she's a Callahan now, not related to those Callahans. And then Noel Broughton at Brickyard, I mean, in Mobile, does a lot for the music scene. Obviously, Maggie Smith with Soul Kitchen, who's a dear friend and has helped me so much in my career as a musician. Over the Bay, there's a lot of great places too, man. I mean, Page and Palette does some cool stuff. There's a new place that I'm going to be doing booking called Provision. I mean, all up and down. I mean, I cut my teeth on the Causeway.
Mm-hmm.
For real, like in my early 20s when we were at school together.
I've seen you at Felix's before.
Yeah, I mean, Felix's Fish Camp, which is like, I love Felix's, not the greatest gig in the world because you're just background music.
Yeah.
But you know, I did, no exaggeration, probably 200 gigs at Felix's. I would not bat an eye to say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've done thousands of gigs on the Causeway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were years where I would play on the Causeway two times a day, two or three times a week, you know, in the and like, so, all, you know, from Bluegill, Ed Shed was so great to me. I booked Lapp's Grocery and Grill. I did a music festival there when it was at Ralph and KQ's. I've played there. Felix's, the Tex-Mex place. I used to book their music. I can't remember. But all up and down the Causeway.
I know what you're talking about. I can't think of it either.
And then playing late night band gigs at Traders with for Barbara, you know, when Barbara gave me a shot when I was like 21, 20. I came in and sat in with some band, and then she was like, look, I like the way you play guitar. Like if you have a band, you want it to get here. So yeah, there's a lot of people to thank. I feel like I'm leaving someone out too.
Well, think about it a little bit. As a domesticated version of my former self,
right.
I do a lot more acoustic stuff these days than the metal and hard rock stuff I really used to do back then, which was all original, underground, jumping off of full stacks and into the mosh pit and getting knocked around, but having just such a great time. And same camaraderie talked about earlier with bandmates and being able to play off one another and feed off ideas and appreciate and respect. Such a good time in my life. And I used to play at places like, you know, this place called the Cell Block, and it was downtown Mobile. It's not there any longer. This place called the Alabama Music Box, which is still downtown.
Yeah, Chris Schwalz got it now.
Right?
Chris is great, man. The Schwalz are good people. And Alabama Music Box is an essential venue for us in this town.
The Blind Mule.
Blind Mule's very cool spot. Are they doing music anymore?
They do.
They do brunch now, and it's wonderful.
And I actually hosted an open mic night on the bottom of the Blind Mule a long time ago. But upstairs is where we used to throw down and make the ground shake.
Right. Well, I mean, so there's that, right? So this is almost like two different. Like there's the venues where you go in and you play cover songs, like the Floribama 10-2, right? Like God knows how many. I've been playing at the Floribama for 15 years. And then there's venues like Alabama Music Box and Blind Mule where like I can, because I like, I mean, the music, if you were to just let me have a gig and play what I want to play, it's going to be out there and weird. I've been playing guitar for 30 years. Like I'm going to experiment and play stuff that unexpected and perhaps, and that's a strange concept, right? Is like, and people out there may not have never thought about art in terms of its capitalistic or its ability like that. But like, are you writing a song for it to sell? Or are you writing a song to express yourself? And it's like, and that's why I love playing jazz, is because like, I don't really care if you like it. The fact that you think the music that I play under my name has anything to do with you is arrogant of you.
I hear you, man.
Yeah. So if I'm going to go in the studio and record my own stuff, I don't care if anyone listens to it. It's not, I'm not going in there for them.
You're like documenting your feelings essentially, right?
Yeah. It's like a painting, man. It's like, or whatever. Your music is a different art form too, because it's a temporal art form, meaning it exists in time. So really without the ability to record it, once you play, it's in the ether. It's gone. It's gone.
Most of what I have written is in the ether.
Oh, man. Ether is a good place.
I have two questions.
Okay.
All right. And I guess we're kind of rounding third base here, but this one's easy. This is a softball for you. Solid state or tube?
Oh, tube amps.
I knew you would say that. What about guitar pedal setup, minimalist or orchestra of pedals doing all sorts of amazing things?
I'm an Allman Brothers guy, man. You know, that my cousin, I think I mentioned that, is actually playing with JMO from the Allman Brothers now. So we go straight in the amp. We don't run pedals. We put a tuner on top of our pedal and then we warm our amp up. I mean, depending on the, you know, there are situations where I may run an overdrive because I can't bring the right amp out or whatever. Or I run a Klon clone, actually, not even an overdrive, but typically straight in the amp.
Hey, a lot of musicians these days, especially like worship, like large worship bands and things like just Hillsong United comes to mind, right?
They're running massive pedal boards.
Yeah, well, or they get this, you know, $2,000 pedal board, right? But they run their guitar straight into it, and then that's straight to the soundboard, like no amp included.
Yeah,
right?
Should have been born where I was this age in the 60s, you know, like in late 60s, in all seriousness. Like I'm if you came by our store right now, I have some pieces in there. Like I have a 1968 Fender Baseman 215, the big cab, 1973 Marshall Super Lead, which is a very, very high end, like Allman Brothers esque era. And you turn that on and crank it up, and like anyone that plays it's like, that's the sound. That's the sound we all listen to, whether it's an old Clapton record, whether it's an old Allman Brothers record or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what they were doing.
So we have talked a lot about a lot of your projects and a lot of your endeavors. And I want anyone that hears this to associate the name John Cochran with music in Mobile and Baldwin County. Like there's just a few names that when you think of music here locally, you think of.
Oh, that's cool, man.
And for me, you're definitely one of those names. Thank big you. Time. And I'm very proud of what you've been able to accomplish. I love to see you as a business owner operating a music store out of downtown Mobile. I want to give you an opportunity to tell the listeners where you're at, how to find you, your social media, email number, anything you want to share.
Yeah. So Mobtown Music, if you want to find me in the flesh, that's probably the best place. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm Coastal Alabama Community College is very cool about stacking all my classes one day a week. So I can, cause they know that I play and I'm on the road sometimes, or I'm, you know, so other than Wednesday, I'm at Mobtown Music. Cause I teach at Coastal all day Wednesdays. So,
and you have a partner as well, right?
Partner Brett Harrington, who's just one of my closest friends now, man. And a wonderful guy, wonderful businessman. He's a great sousaphone, tuba, trumpet, trombone player, which is a great compliment to me being a guitar player. Cause if you need band instruments, whatever, you have two people that are, you know, he's an expert. I hesitate to call myself an expert on anything, but you have two guys that are versed in whatever you're coming for. So yeah, we're at Mobtown all the time. You can get lessons, instrument repairs, you know, you can come by and see the studio. It's a beautiful spot. And one cool thing about Mobtown is we focus on local guitar builders in this area. So I've got Ewar guitars, which are like hand built, beautiful guitar.
Come on.
I mean, I'm talking about one guy built this guitar. It's not coming off a factory line from Fender or Gibson. And the price point is cheaper than a Fender, not a Gibson, a Fender. Like he's trying to get his name out there. And they're some of the finest guitars I've ever put my hands on. I've got Bond guitars, which are beautiful Tele Strat-esque kind of built guitars. Again, hand built, hand wired. You couldn't go out and find anything better than these guitars. And then I'm really excited. I got a new builder coming in called Rod Phelan Guitars. He's building me a Les Paul, an SG remake, and a Jazzmaster.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got Two Hand Guitars, which is an acoustic builder over in Fairhope that builds. I mean, you have to see it. It's a work of art. Each one of them is a work of art. You know, so we do try to focus on the Mobile thing.
If you're a musician and you're listening, if you're a guitar player, you need to go check out those guitars.
Yeah.
No kidding. As always, I want to take the opportunity to thank my team. They're not here in the studio, but I hear them tiptoeing around trying to make sure that they're not causing a distraction. But they are in the background supporting everything we're doing here in the podcast, all the guests that we bring on. If you're listening and you're interested in coming on and telling your story, we'd love to have you. Just reach out to me. Other than that, anything else that you want to share, man? I'll tell you what, one piece of advice that you would give aspiring business owners or musicians, right? You have anything? Put you on the spot.
If a piece of advice to aspire, be cool and be kind.
Be cool and be kind. That's going to be the post for this podcast, right? It's going to be,
man,
John Cochran,
yeah.
Be cool and be kind.
Like, That's it. Be cool and be kind. I mean, like in all seriousness, like, I have this thing I say to people all the time when they're stressed out, you know, and it's like one of two things are going to happen in any situation. Everything's going to be all right. Or there's a possibility that the other thing would happen. And that's that everything's going to be all right.
Do you say everything is going to be all right? Or do you say every little thing is going to be
little.
All right?
It's all. Yeah. I don't say little, but I do have a shirt with Buddha on it that says every little thing is going to be all right.
Ah.
Which is a nice tie in. But yeah, man, I mean, sometimes some things don't, there are things that haven't worked out for me in my life that I really wanted to work out. And 5 years later, found out that not working out was the absolute best. See what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, so, I don't know what the Great Spirit's grand plan is. I have to exist moment to moment, but I know that I've always been taken care of, and you will too. So
I'm very thankful that you came, shared your story with us, and spent time here in the studio.
Yeah, man.
Look forward to catching up with you again soon. You know, this has been the View from the Fence Post podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Turlington, a financial advisor with C-Squared Wealth Strategies. But as you can tell, this is not a financial podcast. Hope everyone has an awesome weekend.
Have a great weekend, man.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through registered representatives of Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. C-Squared Wealth Strategies in Cambridge are not affiliated.